The following presentation is brought to you by the Pride of ODU, the official NIL collective of Old Dominion Athletics. Be a monarchist. Join the Pride. Monarch Nation, it is bowl week. Old Dominion faces off this Wednesday at 5 p.m. in Orlando in the Cure Bowl against the South Florida Bulls. But first, I have to introduce Aaron. How are we doing today?
Good, man. Just checked into the hotel for us, so we're ready to go.
And we're welcomed again by Justice of the G5 Hive. How are we doing today, buddy?
Doing great, man.
Well, thanks for joining us.
A little chilly outside today, but doing good.
It is.
Well, I haven't seen any sign of snow yet, so I'm happy as of this moment. All right. So this Wednesday, Old Dominion faces off with USF. This is an interesting game because both quarterbacks have opted out. However, they're the only opt-outs for both teams. I think this is a factor of the – when we're playing this game, we're playing it very early. Luckily, for our case and their case, this will be a good matchup despite the two quarterbacks being gone. Initial thoughts of us getting the Cure Bowl against this good American team. Fellas, what do you think?
I like it. It's a nice destination. It does make it a little bit harder for our folks to travel, so we'll see less people than we did at Myrtle. I mean, that's just a reality of the case. But the guys will get a nice place to play, nice stadium, great weather. I think it's supposed to be like 70 degrees in Orlando for the game. And I'm excited that our coaching staff at this moment that we're recording is intact as well.
Yeah, and to just add to what Aaron said, it's one of the best matchups, I think, in the bowl season, right? You got two of the best G5 programs this past year. Two, you know, if you look back to, I don't know, like week four or so, Two of the top programs that are being mentioned for the college football playoffs. So it's great to be able to have, you know, such a good matchup and, you know, someone different for our fans. You know, some of the bowl prognosticators had us going against Western Kentucky and we've played them before. And so something different and, you know, great location, all the above.
All right. So we've been doing these matchups all year to just kind of get an idea of what we're looking at. I will say I'm kind of bummed we don't get to see Byron Brown. It obviously increases our chances of winning here because he is an electric quarterback. Looking at some of his stats today, only the 12th player in college football history to have over 3,000 yards and 1,000 yards rushing. The guy, honestly, if they win another game or two, he might have been in New York last night. He had that good of a season. But he is not playing, so you need to look at those – passing numbers a little bit skeptically. Their offense is rated better than ours on PFF, and then our defense has the edge on PFF, and then their special teams is rated higher than ours. One thing that kind of jumped out at me looking at these two teams is their O-line is very, very good.
I'll be interested to see. Obviously, those guys, like you said, very good offensive line. If things don't go well early for them, and they need to make some adjustments, that's where there could be some challenges with such a coaching shuffle on their side. It'll be interesting to see. They obviously know the offenses, coaches know what they're doing. But when you're put in that spotlight where you've got to make adjustments on the fly, and you've had a bunch of guys move up, and you don't necessarily have the support staff underneath, that'd be interesting if that happens.
So to add to what Aaron just said, to clarify it for some of you guys might not know, their head coach, Alex Golish, accepted a new job at Auburn, I believe. He took most of his offensive staff with him already. So Alex Golish is an offensive-minded guy. Him, his OC, his wide receiver coach, his O-line coach, and maybe the quarterback coach are all gone. So in this game, the tight end coach will be their offensive coordinator. And I learned that their running back coach has been put in charge of the O-line. So they're working on kind of offensively a skeleton crew. Their interim head coach is Kevin Patrick, who is their D-line coach. Their defensive coordinator is still there. So defensively, they'll be operating as normal. But offensively, it's going to be very different for them. And their OC's first game ever calling plays.
For our listeners, though, is you got to stay tuned to after the break, because Mike sat down with Ricky, and this is one of the questions that he poses to Ricky is about these coaching adjustments, and Ricky has some answers to that.
Absolutely. I'll be interested to see if it impacts them. I can't imagine it won't, just because you got fewer people to rely on and point out anything.
Well, and these guys are going to be in roles that they're not used to, right? And so, like, you know, how are they going to handle adversity when it comes, et cetera?
And to add to that, because Byron Brown is not playing, they have a very interesting quarterback playing in this game. Gaston Moore, he has been in the system for 6 years. He was at UCF with Josh Heupel, followed him to Tennessee, graduates from Tennessee. He takes a job in logistics in Charleston, South Carolina. Last year, USF's backup quarterback gets drafted to the MLB draft, and they call Gaston up and say, hey, we need you again to come back and be our backup quarterback. He suits up, gets the USF, and it's led to this moment where he will have his first start ever in a bowl game in Orlando. His name is Gaston.
We were talking about this before we came on the air. Is Mike says, man, this is sounding a lot like a Disney movie. We're hoping that the guy does not have his Rudiger moment. And then Mike was like, wait a minute, Disney character named Gaston or Gaston? There absolutely is. We're in Orlando. Let's not make for a good Disney flick.
Not well, hopefully it ends like the movie where he's in, right? Where the bad guy loses. So,
good point. That's right.
Hopefully.
Or the beast.
That's right.
Hopefully. But there's a chance that, I mean, this is a storybook kind of story. Like the guy gets, you think of all these Disney sports movies they have, it's always the last guy you expect to have like some amazing moment. He's working in an office, like doing supply chain stuff. And he gets a call and he comes into a bowl game with a skeleton crew of coaches and just goes off. Like, that sounds like a Disney movie.
Claiming the rights for that right now. So if things go off the rail and the folks from Orlando want to do this, you gotta consult with us for this movie.
The post game, they ask him what's he going to do next? I'm going to Disney World, baby.
Disney World.
But yeah, it should be a very interesting game. Let's look at the matchup with RD and their O, since we're talking about it. Obviously, the quarterback, Byron Brown, is listed here. He's not playing. All right. Their O line, like I said, is very good. Their running back, Davenport, has had a pretty good season. He did not start the season as their lead back. Mid-season, he kind of took over and started getting more snaps and did really well in that role. Three very good receivers. This is a very good offense.
Those guys are tall, too. I think both of those two guys on the outside, Singleton and Koger, are like 6'3", 6'4". Koger is a true freshman. And Singleton, they call him Baby Megatron. So those guys are tall and can make plays.
I don't want anything to do with Megatron. But, guys, talk a little bit about the type of offense that they run, because I'm looking at the running backs, and you got three running backs that have basically 70 carries or more, 6.6 yards, 6.4 yards, almost 5 yards. Like, these guys can run the ball. So I know that y'all are familiar. Just talk a little bit about it so the Monarch fans that have no idea about South Florida.
So Golish was a Heupel disciple, like he was the OC at Tennessee. So he brought that wide splits offense to South Florida when he got the job, and that's what they'll be running. If it sounds familiar, it's the same offense that Decker ran for the majority of his time here. They average 43 points per game. They're adept at running the ball and passing the ball. I think they're 11th in the country in rushing yards per game. 18th in the country passing the ball. Like, they're a high-powered offense. They averaged over 500 yards per game.
I would say the one thing I would add is, like, with Moore at quarterback, like, he's not the running threat that Byron Brown was, right? And so certainly when you have a quarterback the caliber of Brown that can run, that really helps offense overall, right? Running game, everything. So it'll be a little bit different with Moore there, right? Because he's just not – it's not his skill set.
Right. But he's got a good arm, and he's got receivers to throw to. I imagine they'll lean more on the pass in this game, or just not him running, but they have
right.
Three guys with over 400 yards rushing this year. Yeah,
they got studs in the backfield. A more traditional rushing sort of attack.
Yeah. They're going to definitely challenge us defensively, despite having a guy in his first start. It's not like he's a freshman. This is a six-year guy. Like, he's a grown man. It could be a challenge defensively.
I'd say the key matchup, I think, is how our secondary does against those receivers, right? Those, particularly Singleton and Koger, because they're definitely going to have a height advantage.
While we're talking about the offense, a backup tight end has a familiar name. Weston Wolf, Hayden Wolf's little brother, is still on this USF roster. But Aaron, what were you about to say?
No, I was going to ask. It's been a little while since our last game, and I know, you know, we had some guys on the defensive side of the ball that were a little bit banged up. Any idea on how those guys, you're talking about defending the pass, how those guys are feeling about their availability? Or
I think I imagine available. I think based on, I saw him stretching the other day. Like, we didn't get to go to practice when I went to the press conference, but he was
You say Botros?
Yeah. Okay. So I'm assuming he's available. I saw him sitting there stretching. So I'm assuming he must have practiced that day.
Yeah. I think our only real concerns injury wise are on the offensive side of the ball.
Yeah.
But speaking of offense, we'll go to our offense versus their defense. Again, it has the wrong quarterback here because he was the starter all year. We'll be playing Quinn Hennicle in his second start ever, his first since his amazing debut against Arkansas State.
That's right.
I think we're going to be a run-heavy team this week. And we have a challenge ahead of us with this defense because they're pretty talented.
Especially those two guys in the middle, Mitchell and Seliskar. Those guys might be the two most talented D tackles we've seen all year, or at least on par, you know, close to what we saw from Indiana. So it's going to be a challenge. I think that, to me, that's the key for our offense, is being able to handle those two guys in the middle.
And they have a All-American linebacker in Harris. Had another fantastic season this year. Someone to keep an eye on. Ricky does talk about him briefly in our interview. They're definitely going to challenge us, and we're going to need some balance from Quinn in this game. And I'm hopeful that with this receiving core, he has a little bit more success passing the ball than we've seen this year. But he really hasn't had a real opportunity with the ones all season. So.
Yeah, you talk about Harris, he's good. Jalen Shuler, their other linebacker, is also really good. And then their cornerback, the one that on the graphics covering Ja'Cory, Jonas DeClona, he's a lockdown corner. He's really talented as well. So certainly they got quite a few impressive pieces on defense. It'll be a big challenge for our offense.
Just to go back to what you were saying, Mike, is when Quinn has had a chance this season, it's been late in games, and I really think that we've dialed the offense back. It's been really just kind of, for the most part, hand the ball off, run the clock out, with the exception of, you know, a handful of throws. And we saw that him make two or three intermediate throws towards the end of the season. So going to be good. It'll be a good opportunity going into next season. Obviously, Colton is moving on, so we're going to have a new quarterback next year. So for us to be able to get some snaps and some preview of that is a good thing.
I will say this about their defense. There's opportunities against this defense. If you look at how they performed against Navy, a predominantly rushing team, there's an opportunity here. They give up 386 yards per game. So while they get 500 a game, they do give up a lot of yards. And our offense is no joke either. We average 460 on our own. So this could be a high-scoring game.
It could be. I think, you know, hopefully we can the bug that bit us earlier in the season, or midway of the season, I guess, what you say with the turnovers, hopefully that doesn't return. But, yeah.
It'll be interesting. I mean, you've got two quarterbacks that don't have a ton of snaps under their belt. And so I think whoever makes the least amount of mistakes could be in a, you know, a decent position to win this game.
And it feels like, I mean, we have the advantage there just in terms of our offense won't have to change as much with a different quarterback as there as well.
Yeah, I mean, Quinn, his skill set is pretty similar to Colton's, where, you know, he's a great runner. Gaston, he's the pocket guy.
It'll be interesting. Like you talked about, Mike, that the offense that we'll say both these teams run. I don't know squat about – I know more about Gaston than Gaston. But you've got to have some arm talent to be able to run this offense of the way that it's designed. And as we've alluded to over the last half of the season and talking about our offense has adjusted a little bit. We haven't been running those extreme wide – sets. We've kind of brought that in and more like what Ricky was doing before, right, when he took over the offense. So, I mean, obviously Quinn's got the arm strength to be able to do whatever he needs to do, but it should be a seamless transition for him. It's just a matter of how comfortable he can be, how our offensive line can take care of him.
I will also know, I mean, I think our two defenses, both USF and Old Dominion's, with how they played this season, they're also playing a team, an offense they see in practice every day. So they're going to have some ideas on how to slow down these offenses that maybe we haven't seen this season for both teams. Like, it's going to be really interesting to see how that works out. But I'm excited. We opened up as 7-point underdogs. And once that Byron Brown news broke, it went down quickly to 3.5, which is where it stuck. One thing I also learned is Tampa, or where USF is not in South Florida. It is almost
like Central Florida.
Right.
There are already a Central Florida.
There is. But Central Florida in Orlando.
But it's very close to Orlando.
Yeah.
So they have the capability. Like an hour away. Ton of fans to this game. I don't know if they will, because while we're excited for this bowl game, I'm not sure they had the same level of excitement.
Especially like with their coaching staff gone, no Byron Brown.
Yeah. They are very excited about their new head coach, though.
Yes. Yeah. I saw kind of off topic, but related to South Florida, where they the school gave the athletics a loan of like what, $22 million. So
yeah,
they're serious about football.
Well, I mean, they're kind of put into a tough position. Their rival UCF ends up leaving them and joining the Big 12. Obviously we all think there's only a handful more seats left at that big boy table. And they're going all in on athletics right now to try to get one of those last seats in what will be the P4.
Yeah.
They're building a beautiful stadium right now.
Yeah. They,
I think it's what, $300 million budget. Like,
yeah,
they're going all in on athletics, and it's quite impressive what they're trying to do. Hopefully it'll pay off for them, but yeah, they're going all in.
Back to the game. I think, the key, I already said this, but the key for us on offense is blocking those two guys in the middle. And then when we're on defense is how our corners play against those two receivers. I think those are the big keys to the game.
All right. I'm excited to get down to Orlando. It's going to be a good week. Tuesday night, there is a social that ODAF is hosting. I'm excited for that. It goes from 6 to 9. I think it's, do you guys remember the name of the place?
The Social something. Social.
I think it's at their live location. It's like sports and something social.
Yeah.
Looks like a big sports bar. Should be a good time. I know we had a good time at the social events hosted in Myrtle Beach and in Charlotte.
Really did. Yeah.
If you haven't been to one of these, I would say maybe you might want to eat before you go because the bar gets pretty packed. And we all know how hard it is to get some food when it's very busy.
And if you're trying to get some of those hors d'oeuvres that are mentioned in it, don't depend upon that.
That's right. Everybody's trying to do that, right?
There are so many places to eat down there. If you're staying at the Renaissance Team Hotel, I mean, you'll run into restaurants on accident.
Yeah, maybe Sports and Social Orlando.
Maybe even arrive early and get dinner before the event starts. And then Wednesday, before the game, at 1 o'clock, the ODU Alumni Association is hosting their pregame tailgate from 1 to 5. Should be a good event. They've always done a great job with these bowl game events.
It's such a great value.
Oh, yeah. Like $30 all you can eat.
$30 for all you can eat, non-alcoholic drinks, water, soda, if that's how you like to roll. If you want beer, you want wine. I think that they had both of those last time. It was $50 for all you can eat and the drinks. So great deal for everybody.
Yep. Yeah. I will add that we talked about the injuries. We saw Zach Barlev leave the last game early. And we know that Trey Brown's been dealing with certain injuries. I'm not sure what their status is right now. I expect Zach to play. Because that's kind of the guy he is. But it'll be interesting to see if Trey can make it. I hope he can because he is an electric receiver that just kind of changes what we can do as an offense.
Yeah, it'll certainly be interesting to see who's available. Because everything we've heard, it's all based around whether, you know, we have a handful of guys that are banged up. And that's going to determine it.
Yeah, I will go back to this because you mentioned it, Aaron, that we've been very lucky through this coaching carousel so far to have our staff intact. Knock on wood.
Michigan domino could cause a ripple effect.
It could. But those things tend to start at the top. And how long have the three of us been talking about this and responding to social media comments and people asking the question, the whole Virginia Tech thing, that it wasn't happening and that it made too much sense that Old Dominion and Ricky were going to get a deal done. It was just a matter of time. And we saw that just happen.
We did. I will also say I saw some people annoyed or disappointed with the amount of years they gave him. They gave him a four-year extension. But I think you need to look at the market. Ricky could have taken an OC job with Virginia Tech. They ended up hiring a guy with less experience than him for cheaper, I imagine.
Yeah.
He could have, if we offer him 3 years, we know a 3-year deal for a head coach is really just a 2-year deal because you can't go into the lame duck season, right? So if he's looking at, well, I could go to Virginia Tech for 2 years and make more money, or I could take a 3-year extension. It's the same thing, essentially. So you gotta have
that value proposition.
Right. You have to outweigh what the other opportunities are. And that's where you end up in a situation where you're at 4 years. Again, with last year being revenue sharing, we were told that this year's coaching market would be crazy. And we're seeing that. A lot of teams did not fire their coaches last year out of preparation for revenue sharing coming on board. That led to this year where we have a lot more college coaching openings and it dilutes the market, right?
It creates a lot more competition for those that are available.
Sure. You have to overpay.
Yep. Well, you have to overpay, but you also, as a G5 or G6, you're not going to have the potential guys that you might want to hire, you're hiring from a lower level than you normally would.
You end up settling.
Right. This is not a year you wanted to be in the coaching market as a G5.
No, we've been beating the drum on there are coaching college football at this level has always been complex. It's a very difficult job. But it's more difficult, more complex than it ever has been before. Throw in the transfer portal first, then throw in NIL. Now throw in rev share, NIL, whatever you want to call it. It's you got to have someone who can take the complexity, take all the things that are going on, and then be able to orchestrate that, to be the CEO of your organization, not just a football coach. And Ricky's a smart dude. He gets it. He understands. And it's clear that over the last couple of years, he's seen how that landscape is playing out. And you can see how he's developed the staff underneath just from a recruiting standpoint. I mean, you guys can talk better about that than I can, but understanding what the new organization needs to look like and him at the head of that organization, it's a no-brainer that we extended him. And 4 years is the right amount, in my opinion. That's just my opinion, but it's the right number.
It feels like he's gone through the learning process, if you will, right? Like, you know, first-time head coach. He's learned, he's grown, et cetera. And, like, why do you want to go through that again so quickly, right? Like, chances are we're going to have to go through it again, but it's because he's going to have another successful year or two here at Old Dominion, and he gets hired away. And that's a good problem to have, right? But yeah, I mean, like, the job they've done last year and this year, like, in the recruiting has been phenomenal. Like, it's been pretty – I mean, they've really done it, especially this year, they've done a really good job of plugging the holes. We saw that last year. And, like, just look at the receivers. Everyone was so concerned about our wide receivers going into the season. And I know we all said, like, you shouldn't be concerned because – there's so much talent in that receiver room. We couldn't say, like, oh, hey, this guy's the next – who the next man might be, because there were so many that were really good. Sure. And we saw that come to fruition. I feel like they've done equally as good a job this offseason, you know, with receivers, offensive linemen, defensive backs. They've done a really good job bringing in talent to Old Dominion.
Not just on the front end where they've gotten guys to commit. In years past, they've gotten guys to commit, but then they've decommitted. They've determined that they were going to go somewhere else for whatever reason. Like, they've been able to all the way through is to get these guys, stick with them, committed, and signing those guys. I think last week it was, Mike, you were talking about the quarterback. The quarterback position is a prime example of that. A few years back, you had dudes on the hook, but then they just, you know, shook free.
Yeah, I think what kind of Justice started with the learning curves of being a head coach, there's a lot. You make mistakes. Ricky obviously made mistakes with maybe the OC position, not locking in those quarterback commits. And those hurdles have been overcome. He's now a much more prepared coach, understands this program. He understands what it takes to recruit here, the type of athletes he wants, but also the type of mentality. Something we've learned is if a guy as a freshman, before he's even on campus, if he asks for money early in that process, that's not the type of guy we want here. If money is one of the first things on his mind, we're better off getting someone that wants to be developed and that wants to compete. Those are lessons learned through time. He understands what kind of guys we need in this system to win. If we have to go through another coaching change, that's going to be lessons that guy's going to have to learn over time. And we're avoiding that by extending Ricky. And I think it's going to end up having great results in the next 2 years, to the point where we're definitely going to have to hire a new head coach in the next 2 to 3 years.
Like Justice said, that's a good problem to have. If no one ever wants to hire your coach, your program's probably not winning as much as you would hope it to be doing so.
Yeah, like JMU. Like, they've had to hire a lot of coaches over the years, and it's because they keep winning.
Yep.
And I think that's where we're headed with what he's built here. So, Congratulations, Ricky. We're very excited that you will be here next year.
That might be a good segue to the second half of the show, Mike.
Yeah, before we do that, do you guys want to do predictions for this bowl game?
I predict that we're going to have an awesome time in Orlando, Florida, 70 degrees on Wednesday.
Justice?
I think we get a win. I really hate to predict a score because I can just see so many. There are just too many variables, I think. But I think at the end of the day, we get a win. We win our second bowl game, and we get to 10 wins on the year, first time since 2016 for both, right? So that it just feels like somewhat of a destiny, so to speak.
Mike?
Yeah, I'm predicting a win. Ready for him to show off all of the skills he has and use this receiving core to the best of his ability. I think it's going to be a good game. They're a good team. Yeah, I don't know. Like Justice says, this could be a low-scoring game. It could be a high-scoring game. It could go a million different ways. But Ricky Ronnie gets his first bowl win in Orlando. We finished the season with 10 wins, and we're all going home happy.
And we prevent the new Disney movie.
That's right.
Fingers crossed. That is my worst nightmare.
The beast wins again.
That's right. Unleash the beast. That beast being Quinn Hennicle and crew.
All right. Well, stay tuned for after the break. We'll be with Ricky Ronnie. Go Monarchs.
Go Monarchs. Monarch Nation, we had the special opportunity to talk with head coach Ricky Ronnie ahead of the bowl game. Thank you for joining us today, coach. How are you doing today?
Yeah, doing good. That's quite the video. You guys are up the production value on all these things. This is awesome.
Well, we're trying always to make sure we give a better product to the fans. Just like you did this year, congratulations, 9-win season. Looking back, how does it feel to be here at this moment right now?
It feels good. I mean, obviously, we want to go get 10. You know, I mean, yeah, but it feels good. I was happy with the way the team was constructed. I was happy with the way the team bought in. And then, you know, I was obviously happy with the way the team performed. I mean, you know, as a coach, obviously, you know, you look back on it on some missed opportunities that we know we had. But I also, you know, when this thing all ends, I know I'm going to take a couple days and look back at all the successes we had. And really I need to do a great job of evaluating both, you know? Right. I mean, I think it's easy for people to go back and look at why did the negative things happen? Right. But I also think you need to go back and look, all right, what decisions did we make that allowed the positive things to happen too? And how can I, you know, most closely replicate those and that sort of thing. And I think that's something that's just as important to look at. And I know that I haven't always done a great job of doing that throughout my life and throughout my career. So it's something I know I need to take some time to look at here once this bowl game's over.
Yeah, it is really easy to focus on the negatives instead of the positives and trying to replicate those. Obviously this year, most successful season at Old Dominion. Obviously, building a program, you have a lot of steps to getting to where you are right now. But if there was one catalyst that you would say is the reason you are where you are right now with this program, what would you credit for that?
I mean, there was a lot of different things that happened that led to it. I think, you know, our staff did some good things and some evaluation on some junior college players and on some transfers. But I would say that ultimately we were able to retain some guys along both lines of scrimmage. We were able to develop guys along both lines of scrimmage and, you know, both offensive and defensive line. I think that was probably the ultimate catalyst that we were able to get done is, you know, we were able to play very, very well on both, you know, the offensive and defensive line. We were able to play with relatively the same people all year at both the offensive and defensive line. And they got better throughout the year. And so I think that they really became culture drivers for us. And ultimately, I would say that was probably the catalyst. Now, just because it's the catalyst doesn't mean there weren't many, 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 many other things that happened in there as well, right? And we did. We had a number of different things, number of different players, you know, across the board on both offense, defense, and special teams that made huge impacts. But if I had to pick one catalyst, it would be, you know, just the line of scrimmage and how we were able to really kind of assert our dominance at those two areas this year.
Yeah, it all starts up front. But like you said, kind of a butterfly effect. Like if you take out one thing that's happened over the last few years, how different are the results?
Yeah, pretty different. I mean, you know, I mean, I think even some of the negative things that have happened, right? I mean, and some of the things that I've been able to learn from as a head coach, you know, that our staff's been able to learn from. Yeah, I mean, both positive and negative. There's a lot of different things that have happened that have allowed us to get to this point. Now, is it the point that we want to be at? No, it's not. I mean, we want to win a conference championship and put ourselves in position to play in the playoffs. I mean, that's what we want to do. But, you know, the reality of the situation is there were still a lot of successes in this year. We still need to acknowledge that. And I'm also acknowledging that, yeah, there's still bigger goals out there.
All right. So thinking about this season, I don't know if you've had a chance to look back and think about all these hurdles and successes we have had. Getting our first P4 win on the road against Virginia Tech in crushing fashion. The ESPN game against Troy, obviously you put on a show, shut them out. There's just games like this we can all kind of look back on and be happy with as fans and members of the Old Dominion community. But is there a single moment for you that is going to stand out for this season?
No, I don't think there is a single moment. I mean, there's a lot that I'm going to be, you know, really happy with and things like that. But to say that there's a single moment, I don't think that'd be disingenuous. I think that, you know, there are some big ones. I mean, you know, obviously being able to have the guys bounce back, practice really hard, practice really well, and be able to come back after two losses and finish with a 5-game winning streak is, I think, you know, really that's something that I'm going to be proud of. You know, I think they did a nice job there. And that was awesome. I mean, obviously, you know, winning in, you know, at Virginia Tech was something that I think a lot of people are going to remember for a long time, you know, and that was pretty special. But, you know, I think that just the overall, how, and I've used this word a lot this year, but how violent our kids played all year, I think is something that I'm going to remember because they did a great job with that. And anybody who's met these kids, they're some of the nicest human beings on the planet. But when they play, they get in between those lines, they play with a physicality that can only be generated through the love of the game of football and through the love of your teammates. And I think that's something that I'm going to remember for quite a while.
All right. So this last Friday, Old Dominion announced that you had a contract extension. So I want to first congratulate you on your earning that extension. We're very happy to hear about it. What does that mean for you and your staff?
Well, I mean, I think it's a little bit of just proof of concept and appreciation for the staff and players and what we've been able to do. You know, I think for some of our younger players, it gives them peace of mind that I'm going to be here and those sort of things, because they did have to take a little bit of a leap of faith, because, you know, some of our younger guys, you know, when they signed, maybe I only had 2 years left of my deal or whatever. So it's a little bit of a leap of faith for those guys, that, you know, while they're here, I'm going to be here. And I think that that's a great thing. You know, I also think it allows some of our coaches to say, okay, put down roots and say, you know, maybe go buy a house or do those sort of things, knowing that they're going to be, that we're going to have an opportunity to be here. You know, I think the other thing is just for, you know, for my family, I mean, my family loves it here. My boys love it here, and they've grown up here. Right. I mean, you know, I mean, we've been here for 6 years. I mean, my boys were, you know, they were young when we got here, and now they're young men, and for them to be able to think that, you know, they might be able to, you know, they get the opportunity to graduate from one high school and that sort of thing is something that very few coaches' kids get that opportunity. So to be able to help them with that. And then for me to be able to, you know, I know how to operate here, and I know what it takes to win here. I know what type of player it takes to win here and those sort of things. And so now, you know, we've been able to hone in on that a little bit more. And so hopefully we can continue to be more successful year after year after year.
Awesome. Bowl game. Obviously, you've coached in a lot of bowl games over the years as an assistant and now as a head coach. There's a lot of talk about how bowls have lost kind of their value recently. You see teams opting out. But to you, when you get to do this announcement and tell your team where you're going bowling, is that different? Is that reaction from them any different from when it was a decade ago?
I mean, it certainly wasn't any different when we realized we were bowl eligible, right? You know what I'm trying to say? And when they said to themselves, all right, well, we get to go to a bowl. I don't think, you know, the reaction to the bowl, you know, I didn't really get to tell them because it came out as much as I wanted to be able to tell them. It kind of came out on Twitter and all those sort of things. So I didn't really get to tell them. They knew, you know, when I told them. So that surprise was off a little bit. But they're excited, right? I mean, they're excited to go play in the game. I mean, they're excited to go to Florida. They're excited to play a great opponent. They're excited to have, you know, some time where they get to hang out with each other. And some, for some of these guys, it might be their last game ever. For some of their guys, it's the last game with this team and that sort of thing. And so, no, it's a big deal, man. It's a big deal. And I could see in the future there being a few less bowls. I think that we've all got to understand that that's probably the direction that it's going. And maybe that's okay. You know, maybe that's okay. But I do think that when you look at the ratings, people still have interest in these bowls. I mean, I'm just being honest with you. I mean, if you go look, I mean, that's the bottom line. And the people want to watch these games, and it's still a holiday tradition, or, you know, as Christmas starts to come, you know, people start to say to themselves, all right, it's bowl season, right? I mean, like, this is, let's watch some bowls. Let's sit down. Let's watch some teams that we haven't had an opportunity to watch and some matchups that we would never get an opportunity to watch again. And so it's still a great thing. And it's still an opportunity to play one more game. And I know some teams turn down some games. And listen, I'm not in their circumstance, so I won't comment on that, because I have no idea what's going on in that locker room. I have no idea what's, you know, some of the things that maybe they went through this year, that, you know, all those sort of things. All I can say is that, you know, when I wake up at night or I watch our guys play or anything like that, it makes me say to myself, man, I would love to be able to suit up one more time and play the game of football just one more time. And you know, I just have a feeling that some of those guys, not all, again, I'm not in those locker rooms, not all, but some of those guys who didn't get to play in that game or whatever, I think in 10 to 15 years, they might be sitting around, you know, having a couple beers, reminiscing with their buddies and saying to themselves, man, I kind of wish we could have played in that game. I'd give a lot to play in that game right now. And that's the thing that I hope, that as money continues to be a big motivator in this, that's the thing you hope doesn't get lost in this whole thing is how much fun it is to play this game and how much people love it and those sort of things.
All right. Now let's get to the opponent. You play a very good team out of the American, a 9-win USF. They've had their own kind of turnover they're dealing with. looking at the tape, does anything jump out to you on their defensive side of the ball?
Yeah, they got good players at all three levels. Really good players at all three levels. They're big. They've got good length and those sort of things, and they can run and hit. They get to the ball pretty well. A lot of similarities to our defense. I mean, they're gonna get to the ball and they're gonna arrive with bad intentions. And then the other thing is they've got their defense coordinator, Coach Orlando, is one of the best in the country, and he does a great job. And he's just gonna give you a variety of looks, a variety of blitzes. It's difficult to necessarily see pre-snap which coverage you're going to get and which blitz you're going to get, and he does a good job. And then he does a nice job of mixing it up and not having too many tendencies. So, yeah, it's going to be a major challenge for our guys.
So I was lucky enough to watch Coach Patrick's, their interim head coach's press conference. He had the positive news that, very similar to Old Dominion, their only opt-out is their starting quarterback. So we're going to get basically what these teams were in the regular season head-to-head on the field, at least. So for the fan, that's exciting to me because the more guys available, the better, obviously.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's going to be a great matchup, and I think there's a lot of similarities between us as teams, you know. We play similar style offenses. Our defenses, when you look at schematically, are not similar, but core belief systems and soul, they're pretty similar. Both have some good special teams units. Both obviously 9-3, both 6-2 in our league. You know, I mean, so there's we both have an in-state Power Four win. You know, there's a lot of similarities between us. I mean, it's kind of it's odd how many similarities there are. So to be able to have this type of opponent, I think both teams are probably pretty jacked up to roll the ball out there and get going.
Now, South Florida has one big challenge ahead of them. Their head coach took a job at Auburn, and a lot of the offensive staff went with him, with Coach Gaulish. I believe their tight end coach will be the offensive coordinator for this game. And then the running back coach has the extra duty of taking care of the O-line. Have you ever been in a position where you had to kind of have a ragtag group call and plays or similar situation to USF this week?
I mean, I've had to call plays in a bowl game when I wasn't going to be the coordinator the next year. And I had the enviable task of facing a top 10 Georgia defense when I did it, you know. And so they had some dudes and those sort of things. But, they're going to be ready, and it's going to be, you know, their quarterback's been in this system a long time. Those offensive linemen, they're very similar to ours. Again, they're very experienced. They have a bunch of older guys on that thing. They're going to know what to do. You know, they're going to know how to get prepared for this game. So I don't really doubt or am too concerned with those things. I think they're going to be ready to go, and it might even give them a little motivation. It's like, hey, we got ready for this game. And there's a lot of offensive linemen who end up going to be coaches, right? Not necessarily even college coaches, but high school and other things. So I'm sure there's a lot of those guys in the back of their mind was like, well, this is what I'm going to do anyway, so I might as well start coaching now. So I think that they're going to go into this game extremely motivated, and they know they're playing a good opponent too. You know, they got to block some Vardy line who's played very, very well this year.
They got their own All-American linebacker, number 34, Mac Harris. What is it about Mac that makes him a very good, productive linebacker?
I mean, it's versatility. You know, I mean, he's on the line, he's blitzing, he's off, he's going kind of almost in the middle of the field. Like he's doing a bunch of different things. So he's a good player, and we know that, and we know what type of, you know, player he can be. Their coaches put him in a really good position to be successful, but then the player has to take advantage of it, which he has over and over and over again.
So one of the big benefits of being bowl eligible, coaches always talk about it, the extra practices, those extra reps for young guys. Being an early bowl game and a late announcement, did you get the allotted amount of practices you're supposed to get?
Well, no, I mean, we're only going to practice about 10 times total for the bowl. You know, we basically had three of those kind of like young practices, and I do think it was extremely, extremely, extremely beneficial, and we were able to see some guys. I thought some guys made some moves in my, even in my brain, you know, I mean, like, okay, that guy can really do it. All right. He showed me something right there, and he showed me something. There's a couple guys that have done some nice things. And so I'm excited that we were able to get that done. And I was also really excited with the amount of juice and the amount of excitement our older guys had watching those practices happen. Those are some of our most intense practices of the year. And a lot of it was just how excited some of the other guys were for to watch those guys perform in those practices.
All right. So for the fans that are considering buying that plane ticket and headed down to Orlando that haven't quite purchased yet, what would you say to them to kind of maybe sell them on it?
Well, it's cold everywhere else. So let's get down to Florida and get that done. You know, I mean, it's beautiful down there right now. And it's a great opportunity. I think the other thing that's awesome about it is, you know, it's far enough away from Christmas to where you're not, you know, you'll still have some time to get that last minute Christmas shopping done and those sort of things. And then this is a team with, you know, we had a lot of seniors. And I think going down to this bowl game is a great way to show your appreciation for what they've been able to do and the amount of positive publicity they've been able to generate for Old Dominion. And so I think that, you know, just being able to get down there and do those sort of things and celebrate with those guys is an awesome experience.
All right, I'm going to ask you one last thing and we'll let you get out of here. So we kind of touched on it throughout this, but the NCAA calendar has kind of led us into this situation where you get these opt-outs, you got teams refusing to play in bowls, and then you get coaches moving on before the bowls are even played or even playoff games are played. If it was your decision, how would you fix the calendar to kind of avoid these situations, or are these unavoidable situations?
Well, okay. One thing, they're a little bit of unavoidable situations, and they've happened for a very long time. And we can act like they haven't. And it always, everyone wants to be a prisoner of the moment and act like these things haven't happened, but they have. Is it a little bit more prevalent right now? Yes, of course it is. But I would fix the calendar in one major way. I think that the national championship game should be played on January 1st when God intended. You know what I mean? I mean, that's just the reality. If that means we got to play a week or so earlier into August, I think that's fine, particularly because all of our players are here all of June and July. So if we have to report one week earlier, I don't think that's that big a deal. But I do think that we should do that. You know, we should have the national championship game should fall on January 1st. I also believe that we should only schedule 11 games. And on the 12th game should be determined by record every year and those sort of things. So like, you know, and that or to help eliminate tiebreakers should be determined on that Sunday who you're playing in that 12th game. I think that would be something that would help a lot of things out, particularly with these big conferences and those sort of things. I think that'd be something that would really help out. And then the final thing I would do, and my coaching brethren are not going to appreciate this, but whatever. I think that, you know, in the NFL, you're not allowed to talk to people, coaches, and they can't go anywhere, right? Because they all have NFL contracts. They all have contracts that generally go through the NFL and all those sort of things. I think that we need that. I think that if we started doing that, it'd be a couple things. Like, one, you wouldn't have as much turnover. You wouldn't have as much doing those sort of things and backdoor dealings and all that sort of stuff. And you'd have to ask for permission. And okay, yeah, they might say yes, but then there's going to be, you know, maybe it's a bigger buyout or whatever it's going to be that's going to be it. You know, in the NFL, obviously they can trade draft picks. So obviously you can't do that, but you could do something else that'd be like, yeah, you can speak to him, but if he gets the job, we're going to want this or whatever. I think that those are the type of things that we can do. In that same, you know, I think that would really help a lot of things out if we were able to do those sort of things. But I mean, ultimately, I mean, for us to act like this is the first year that it's happened. I think we're being a little bit silly with that. I mean, this has been happening for as long as I can remember. I mean, these coaches change jobs, and it's one of the things why I'm so grateful that I'm able to be here. I've been here for 6 years, and to have the opportunity to go through this rest of this contract and say that I've been here for 10 years, that's pretty special. Right. And, you know, when my boys think about what their home is and where their home is, they're going to say, where are you from? And I know my two sons. So they're both going to, you know, one's going to say, well, I was born in Kansas. And the other one's going to say, well, I was born in Tennessee, but they're both going to say, but my home is Virginia, you know, and, you know, that's pretty special that they're going to be able to have something that they can point to as their home.
And in this area, there's a lot of folks like them who've been kind of dragged around their lives and finally found a home. So they're not alone in that.
No, and I think that's one of the reasons why they feel at home here. You know what I mean? I do think that that's a big reason why they feel at home here, is they're not the only ones. You know, they're not the only ones. A lot of their buddies have moved around, or a lot of their buddies' dads have moved around and that sort of thing. And so I think that just that makes them feel more at home. And it's one of the reasons why they fit in so well in this community.
Awesome. Well, we're very excited to have you back for the foreseeable future, Coach.
Yeah.
Congratulations again. Can't wait to talk to you next time. Good luck next week. We'll be down there rooting you on.
All right. Well, thank you. I hope a lot of people show up, and go Monarchs.
Go Monarchs.